Well, thank you very much, Fraser. Good morning, everyone. It is indeed a pleasure for me to be here this morning to talk to you a little bit about Cameco, a little bit about our industry. As Fraser said, it's never simple in the nuclear business, and I think the Chinese said, "May you live in interesting times," and we are indeed living those times today. I have been spending a fair bit of time on the road lately talking about the industry, and I know there's a lot of interest out there and a lot of interest about the present and future state of our industry. And so today I thought I'd just share a few thoughts on that with you. Before I do, I want to acknowledge the leadership transition that Fraser referred to that we're undergoing at Cameco. On June 30th, after I believe more than 8 years of leading the company, our CEO today, Jerry Grandy, will retire from the post. And the board has asked me to replace Jerry, which I have to say, honored and privileged to do. I can tell you the transition is going along very, very well, very smoothly. Jerry and I have been working together for 4.5 years formally, and many years before that. I spent 14 years with Areva before that, so we were competitors and partners at the same time. So that's going well. Jerry served, I think, 18 years with Cameco, 30 years in the nuclear business. We really have to give him credit for the work he's done in solidifying the position of Cameco as a pure-play nuclear energy investment and a leading uranium producer. It's been my pleasure to work with him and learn from him over the past 4.5 years, and we'll keep it going. We'll keep the ship going, and we're going to build on the strong foundation that we've built for an even brighter future for Cameco. So speaking of the future, before I proceed, you can browse your way through that. That's our friendly reminder. I just ask you to look at our AIF and MD&A for the factors which could cause different results and for the assumptions that we'll be making. So given all the recent news, why, you might ask, do we see a bright future for Cameco and for the nuclear industry at this time? Well, it's been about four months since the Fukushima accident, and most countries that use nuclear energy have now had time to first do a short-term review of their plants and their programs, and then a longer-term review is underway. And I can say with very few exceptions, we see these companies and countries continuing their commitment to nuclear. I talk about India, China, South Korea, France, the United Kingdom, Canada, the United States, and almost every other country with a nuclear program have clearly decided to maintain nuclear as part of their energy mix. Of course, we've heard of Germany and Switzerland and Italy being notable exceptions, where in some cases they've decided to close a number of the older nuclear facilities and over the next 10 to 20 years move away from nuclear energy. These decisions, we believe, however, are not an indication of a trend away from nuclear power, as other previously non-nuclear companies and countries are considering adding nuclear to their energy programs in the future. Saudi Arabia, for example, recently announced its plan to build 16 new reactors over the next 2 decades, a $100 billion investment. So we believe that nuclear energy on a global scale will remain an integral part of the energy mix and continue to grow along with the growth in energy demand around the world. Yes, there will be lessons learned and applied as a result of Fukushima, but this will mean that the industry will be even safer, stronger, and better in the coming years. The fact remains that the global nuclear industry has one of the best track records of any industry, and even when Fukushima is taken into consideration in every objective comparison with another major energy source, nuclear stands out as one of the safest options, and I insist will get even safer. Our industry has taken and will continue to take every possible step to identify and mitigate risks and to apply the lessons learned from the Fukushima accident. Whereas the four reactors affected in Japan are about 35 to 40 years old and were nearing retirement, today's reactors are safer, better engineered, and more robust than their predecessors. Like every other technology, reactor design has continued to advance and improve over the last 40 years. Many of the design issues that led to the accident have already been addressed, in newer plants currently operating, and the next generation of plants will be even further advanced. The safety and efficiency of nuclear energy have made it and continue to make it an important option for a world in which energy consumption is rapidly growing. Since 1980, which happened to be the year I graduated from high school, global electricity consumption has tripled, and the International Energy Agency forecasts that it will double again over the next two decades. Every plug in your house and my house, every plug in your office and my office, is filled with technology that demands electricity. That demand will continue to grow. Significantly, the largest growth in energy demand is coming from countries with rapidly expanding economies, countries where many people have previously lived in energy poverty. On a global basis, about 1.4 billion people, 20% of the world's population, do not have access to electricity. And even in many countries that do, like China, per capita usage is only a fraction of that we see in the Western world. We can only expect that usage in these countries will continue to grow, as it has been, making the need to increase energy production more than a business story. It's a human development story. Let's take a little closer look at China, a country with 1.3 billion people and a multi-trillion dollar economy that continues to expand at double-digit pace. As China grows, it needs more energy to fuel industrial plants and expanding urban areas. Over the next 15 years, China is expected to add the equivalent of the entire installed electricity generation capacity of the United States. This is just one snapshot in a developing world with a massive and growing appetite for energy, and we believe that nuclear will continue to be a necessary and responsible part of the solution. Today around the world, there are 437 operable reactors. By 2020, the number of reactors is expected to grow to 529, a 21% increase, or a growth of 92 net new reactors. Those are our numbers. China alone is scheduled to increase from 11 gigawatt electric today to 40 gigawatt electric by 2015. We expect they will have about 65 gigawatt by 2020, and some reports indicate this number could be between 70 and 80 gigawatt. And China is not the only country building nuclear capacity. Turkey, Russia, South Korea, India, United Arab Emirates, and other countries understand that nuclear energy is critical to building their economies and have renewed their commitment to nuclear. As energy demand grows, nuclear energy will increase and is expected to fill an even larger share of the total load. One of the primary reasons that these countries are relying upon nuclear energy to help expand their economies is that in addition to being safe and reliable, nuclear energy remains one of the cleanest, most affordable, and most viable long-term solutions for energy production. Alternative green sources like hydro, solar, and wind have a very, very important role to play, but can only fill a small percent of global demand, and they too bring with them their own unique set of challenges. Nuclear, as you know, has no greenhouse gas emissions, and even in light of the current situation in Japan, has a strong safety and environmental record compared to other forms of energy. So at Cameco, we have been preparing for the expected long-term growth in the nuclear industry with a renewed focus on operational excellence and personal accountability of our people. Over the past several years, we've taken steps to improve our safety performance and to strengthen our relationships with the regulatory agencies. We've also focused on increasing efficiencies using our size and experience to ensure we remain a low-cost producer. The benefits of our efforts in these areas are becoming evident now in our performance. In 2010, we achieved record uranium production with a 10% increase over 2009. As we did this, we lowered our unit cost of production. Our sales volumes remain strong, and we are in a very strong position of being heavily committed through 2016. We are, I believe, one of the few industries that can plan their growth with the certainty of cash flow that this affords us. Utilities, as you know, stockpile fuel resources well in advance of use. The first core requirements for a new reactor can be more than double the volumes needed for regular operations. With the number of new reactors under construction, we believe it will be an active decade ahead. As uranium demand increases, many customers have become more aggressive about securing their fuel supplies. Just last year, in 2010, we had a major breakthrough as two Chinese utilities signed long-term sales commitments with our company. We reached an agreement with China Nuclear Energy Industry Corporation, or CNEIC as we call them, to deliver 23 million pounds of uranium by 2020, and with China Guangdong Nuclear Power Holding Co., CGNPC, for 29 million pounds through 2025. We are very enthusiastic about these agreements and look forward to furthering this relationship with China as the country continues to grow its nuclear program. So while our sales commitments provide stability, we still see opportunities to capitalize on shifts in uranium prices. Our sales portfolio targets a weighted mix of contracts. About 40% include fixed pricing escalated over time, with the remaining 60% linked to market pricing at the time of delivery. This gives Cameco stable cash flow with predictable sales and exposure to the upside when market prices rise and protection if they decline. One of the biggest impacts of the incident in Japan was some short-term volatility in the spot market prices for uranium. Early in 2011, uranium spot and long-term prices surpassed $70 per pound. In the first days after the earthquake, the spot price fell below $50, although finding product at that level was next to impossible. We know that because we tried to buy at that level. Since then, the spot price has fluctuated between $50 and $60, and today sits a little over $54 a pound. The long-term price, however, has been more stable and is currently around $68, a measure, we believe, of the continued commitment to nuclear energy. Given the need for energy and the anticipated growth in uranium demand, Cameco has remained focused on our strategy to double U, with a goal of doubling our annual uranium production to 40 million pounds by 2018. When we look at nuclear new build, we can see what is under construction, what is planned, and we can calculate the growth in demand for uranium and what it will be out into the future. We believe Cameco is in the best position to bring new uranium production to the market by first maximizing production at our existing operations, by bringing on new facilities, and by leading the exploration of properties for future development. To give some perspective on the market, in 2010, global uranium consumption was approximately 180 million pounds. Of that total, 140 million pounds was supplied by Cameco and other producers. The rest came from what we call secondary supply. Over the past 25 years, uranium production has not kept pace with consumption, an issue that has been masked by what we call the secondary supply. In 2013, however, the agreement to blend down Russian military stockpiles, what we call the HEU agreement, expires, which will leave a 24 million pound gap in supply, one that will have to be filled by more primary production. Added to that will be the natural growth that comes from increased nuclear demand, with an estimated increase, our numbers, of about 3% per year. Will there be fluctuations in this? Yes, of course, but if you look at the long-term trend for our industry and consider the requirements of new reactors, the rising trend line is likely to continue. At Cameco, our goal is to satisfy a significant portion of the new demand. Preparing to meet this growing demand is a long-term proposition. Our abundant reserve and resource base is the foundation of our ability to meet the current and future demand in the market. Currently, we have 476 million pounds of reserves and a similar resource base, which we expect to increase as we continue to explore and define new opportunities and begin new projects. Our current projects employ a variety of mining methods and also, as you can see, are geologically and geographically diverse. Each project is strategically designed to increase our production capabilities over the years and move us toward our goal of W. Turning to the projects, our most significant project today under development is the Cigar Lake mine in northern Saskatchewan. It is the largest undeveloped high-grade deposit in the world with an average ore grade of 17% U. That's about 100 times the world average. Cigar Lake is expected to produce 18 million pounds annually at full production, and Cameco's share of that is just over 50% at about 9 million pounds. The challenges, Fraser talked about them, of accessing the ore body, which exists in a sandstone environment, are well documented. Early in 2010, in February, we successfully completed dewatering the mine and are moving toward an expected production startup in mid-2013. Last year, we approved a surface freeze strategy that should bring forward some uranium production in the early years of Cigar Lake's operations, lowering the mining costs and enhancing project economics. This year, we're in the process of sinking a second shaft. We are resuming underground construction, and we plan to finish the surface ore loadout facilities. McArthur River, not far down the road, remains our flagship operation in northern Saskatchewan, and our share of 2010 production was a world record at 13.9 million pounds. Like Cigar, the ore grade from this deposit is about 17% U, again, about 100 times the world average, giving us access to two of the richest ore bodies in the world. As we continue to explore McArthur along strike, we are finding more resources. We, over the past few years, have successfully transitioned into new mining zones using our innovative freezing technique, which allows us to develop up into the Athabasca sandstone. As a result of this success, we plan to continue using this raise bore mining technology that many of you have seen to mine other areas of the project where we originally expected to use other, perhaps less efficient methods. We anticipate this expanded use of raise bore mining will significantly improve production efficiencies in those ore zones. Moving over to Kazakhstan, our Inkai joint venture in Kazakhstan is a low-cost operation with access to another significant deposit. In 2010, Cameco's share of production was 2.6 million pounds of uranium, and we are in discussions with our Kazakh partners and the government to increase our share of future production from blocks 1 and 2, where we are now, to 5.7 million pounds per year. We're also exploring the possibility of future production from Block 3, which is a new area that shows very, very strong potential. So these are the big ones. In addition to the large-scale facilities, we continue to produce at Rabbit Lake. We call it our Energizer Bunny, where we've mined over 180 million pounds of uranium from the Athabasca Basin over the past 36 years. In 2010, this facility produced 3.8 million pounds, and we expect to continue production through at least 2017. Down in the United States, we produced 2.5 million pounds from in-situ recovery operations in Wyoming and Nebraska, and are planning future expansion for these properties. So while the expansion of existing projects will drive our production increases over the next several years, we continue to explore new opportunities for long-term growth. We have a 70% interest in the Kintyre project in Western Australia. Kintyre adds potential for low-cost production and diversity in our geographic reach and in our mining methods. We have generated a mineral resource estimate in accordance with National Instrument 43-101 and are moving the project toward a production decision. Coming back to Saskatchewan, we're exploring our Millennium project and expect that it will allow us to capitalize on our existing milling capacity at Key Lake and at Rabbit Lake. We have completed the mine design and are working to advance the project this year. In addition to that, we also have a direct interest in almost 70 active exploration projects in six countries with plans to remain one of the world's largest low-cost producers well into the future. So in addition to the uranium piece, we are also working to increase our capabilities across the nuclear fuel cycle to better serve our customers and to expand our market share. We right now have the number one position in conversion in the world, and we're investing in our conversion facilities, to expand them and have partnered with GE and Hitachi to explore new laser enrichment technology. We also own a 31.6% interest in Bruce Power. So with all these, the combination of our mining assets, contract portfolio, and revenue streams, we believe we are in very strong position to move forward. As we move forward, we see a bright future for the nuclear industry and for our company. Governments and populations around the world recognize that nuclear must be part of the energy mix, and Cameco remains committed to adding value for our shareholders. So with that, I say in the coming years, I look forward to leading Cameco, and I remain committed, and we remain committed, to the strategy, vision, values that have helped Cameco become a global leader in our industry. So thank you this morning for your interest in Cameco, and I would be delighted to take any questions you might have. Thank you.
Sure, we have time for one or two questions. Anybody?
Right here, Fraser. Hey, Sam, you know where to ask one. I'm just curious, you mentioned earlier in your talk about, in particular, I guess, Germany, and now there's also discussion about Japan with respect to nuclear power plant shutdowns. How realistic do you think it is for countries like Germany, highly industrialized, to actually shut down that enormous capacity of nuclear, even with their own prediction showing a massive increase in coal? It's almost like the greenhouse gas issue is taking a complete backseat. What's your opinion on that for the longer term?
Yeah. You know, Adam, I think all those countries, you talk about Germany and Switzerland and probably Italy, even Japan, have taken the right political decision. That's the decision they have to take now. The feelings are still fairly raw, and to take any other decisions, I think, wouldn't be prudent for the government. Economically, realistically, can they stick with those? Boy, I'll tell you, it'll be tough for all of those countries. Germany, Switzerland has said we're going to phase out by 2032. Well, I can tell you I'll be hopefully golfing somewhere by 2032 when they take that decision. Japan, it's raw. You know, they bring their units down every 13 months for operating for maintenance. And then to get them started back up, they have to get certain approvals, and they're taking a little bit longer. But then again, not a lot of options. You know, if you're still committed to clean air and climate change and greenhouse gas reduction, and quite frankly, what do you replace it with in some of those countries? So, as I say, I think it's the right political decision for now. I think time has to pass, and we have to give it more time. People need to understand what happened at Fukushima, what the industry is doing about it, and over time, I think it'll come back on.
With an Australian accent, I'd like to ask Kintyre, what's going to make it go? You said you're working towards production decision. Is it a price? Is it contracts? Is it whatever?
Probably all of the above. We're just in the pre-feasibility stage there. We'll have, we're drilling off the ore body. We put out a resource estimate that was in the range of what we thought it would be when we bought the project a few years ago. So now we're working with the local aboriginals. We're doing metallurgy work. We're doing the environmental assessment work around the property. And our plan is to have a pre-feasibility report by the first quarter of 2012. That for us in our process is a stage gate that we would stop, look at the project, and if it makes sense to carry on given what the world looks like, then we'd move on through feasibility, and then that would be another stage gate into development. So it's progressing as we'd hoped. We're getting great support from the local government there, so we are optimistic that'll turn into a good project for us.